Fab Lab Podcast, Episode 56, How to Define Your Expectations. Welcome to the Fab Lab, the stone industry's only podcast dedicated exclusively to the business side of your stone shop, where we focus on improving operations inside the business so we can experience more life outside of it. So let's get down to business. Welcome back to the Fab Lab Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Crowley, and glad to be back with my co-host, Wes Rice.
Ah, it's great to be back. Vacation was nice, but it's good to be back to work.
I bet it was nice. I'm envious. I wish I could have been on a vacation too. But anyway, glad to have you back. I am really excited, Wes, about this topic we're going to discuss today, how to define expectations. So we're going to jump right into it today, fellow fabricators. Yesterday, Wes and I were having a conversation totally unrelated to the podcast. Wes is our digital media manager, does all the videography, does all the social media for our companies. And we were talking about the fact that the demand on that skill, the demand on that necessary component of the business is beginning to exceed the number of hours that you have in a day.
It is. It's a coming back from vacation, you see what's waiting for you when you get back.
Yeah. And it's not just vacation. It's the actual demands themselves are beginning to increase to the point where eight hours a day isn't enough. Mm-hmm. And so we started asking these questions. So what do we do? What's our next step? I asked you, Wes, is it even possible? Do you think it's actually possible for us to hire somebody to do what you do as well as you do it?
My internal answer is no. But the and the one I should say is yes, because it sounds arrogant if I say no, but I don't know where to start.
And I think that was the irony. I was asking the same question too, because I don't understand what you do well enough. That's my question too. Are we going to hire somebody in here who is then completely underutilized because we can't figure out? Because what you do is so mysterious to me. It's so out there. I'm asking the same question. You know, number one, is it possible? Can we leverage what you know to continue to meet the demands of the business? And number two, so much of it seems subjective and instinctive and it's something you've learned just by trial and error. How do you communicate? And then, where do you even begin? What would be the first thing we would do if we hired somebody as, let's just say, an assistant for you to come in so we can continue to grow this component of the business, the video, the digital, the social media side of it? Where would we even begin?
Well, that's the question is, where do you begin? Not overwhelm somebody, not to just turn them off or set them up for success.
Well, and what's so common, I think this is universal, it's my opinion, that everybody faces this issue when the demand on their skill exceeds the number of hours they have, they hire somebody. And that's where things break down. They hire somebody and then their expectations aren't met and they wind up frustrated. They wind up pissed. And a lot of times the first response is, I got to find a different person. Obviously, I hired the wrong person to do this because they're not meeting my expectations. How hard can it possibly be? So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to get into it. We're going to drill down into this component. Where do I begin? How do I define setting expectations so that when I do hire somebody to do that work that the business needs of us, that our expectation, that the work is done first and foremost correctly and on time, and so that our expectations are met. So there's an answer to that question. There is a practical, simple, predictable answer to that question. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But before we do, want to mention a word from our sponsor, the No Lift Install System. Very interesting. Yesterday, I was talking with a consultant within the stone industry. He manages a pretty big trade association that we're considering joining. And we were talking about actually the No Lift, kind of a side conversation. The No Lift came up and we were talking about the work that the Natural Stone Institute is doing in conjunction with some federal workplace safety agencies to try and improve the silica exposure issue. And I mentioned to him, you know, I don't think that necessarily back injuries are on par with the risk that silica proposes presents to the industry and more importantly to the individual. And this consultant, this guy that had owned a stone shop for years, sold it, and now is a full-time consultant, said, Aaron, I respectfully disagree with you. I actually think that the material handling side of the stone industry is far more dangerous to the worker than the silica. The silica exposure has been diminished considerably, but the risk to the physical body of an installer is still tremendous. And he said that was one of the things he lost sleep over when he was a stone shop owner. He knew what it was doing to his employees, and he lost sleep over it. He eventually sold his shop, and so out of sight, out of mind. But for the rest of us, We still have to confront that reality, that the work of picking up, lifting, carrying, reaching, straining, stretching to put granite countertops, quartz countertops onto a cabinet, we all know subconsciously, subjectively, intuitively, we know that's hard on somebody's body. So the question is, what are we going to do about it? Well, that's where the no-lift install system comes in. The no-lift install system completely eliminates that component. It mechanically lifts countertops to cabinet height, safely rotates them into the horizontal position, and then allows an installer to easily roll those counters onto the cabinetry without risk to the piece, and more importantly, and depending on who you are, no risk to the installer. That's the power of the no-lift install system. I completely resonated with that. I used to, I don't know if I lost sleep over it, but it always bothered me because I knew what my installers were experiencing. And the no-lift install system has completely eliminated that concern. It's just tremendous. So if you don't lose sleep over that right now, fellow fabricator, I think you should probably go out on an install and either come face-to-face with the realities of what that installing job is, or so that you can be reminded of just how hard that work is. And at that point, I think you ought to visit noliftsystem.com. Check out their financing, $169 a month. For a no-lift install system. It is a fantastic value. You'll start sleeping again at night, not worrying about what's going to happen to your installers, and you'll know you'll be doing the right thing. So check out noliftsystem.com.
You know, Aaron, actually, I'm going to chime in real quick. I was talking to one of our new salesmen, and he went out on an install yesterday.
Okay.
And he talked about the number of pieces he had to bring in, how heavy it was. And his first thought was, everybody, just spend a day at install to see what it's like. Yeah. Just for a quick reminder of what it's like, because if you don't deal with it every day, it's easy to oversimplify or just assume it's fine.
Yeah.
But seeing it, what his thoughts were on lifting those pieces in.
That's right. They couldn't use the cart because it was 42 stairs from the garage down to the boathouse, and yeah. Those pieces had to be carried, and it's heavy. So make sure you visit noliftsystem.com and get your crew a no-lift install cart today. So now back to our topic. How do we set expectations? How do we define our expectations for our teams? How do we answer these three questions? So I want to drill down on this a little bit. Why do you think it is so hard initially when I ask you, Wes, is it even possible for us to hire somebody that can do what you do in this realm as well as you do it? Why is that such a hard question to answer?
Past experience. I was on a video shoot a number of years ago, and I show up. We're doing a video out there all day filming. I get back to edit and realize the guy I had hired to be the second cameraman, his settings were all wrong. The video was completely, completely useless. I was like, oh my gosh, first I blamed him. I was like, what a moron. How could he have not known?
And then this guy was an experienced photographer?
He was experienced. He had a good demo reel, and I realized afterwards, after I had calmed down, it was me. I didn't set him up for success. I mean, but my first reaction was, I'm never hiring you again. I got to hire somebody else new. I got to find somebody else. I'll never use him again.
And so, Wes, I think that is a universal experience. Every single stone shop owner, every supervisor listening to this episode, I believe will relate to that very same experience, that mystification. How is it possible? You know, and I think that's why we develop this first response. Can I even hire somebody to do this job? Because previous experience tells us it doesn't work out very well. And that's that old adage, you know, if you want it done right, you got to do it yourself. Well, I think that's one of the worst statements ever conceived in all of human history, because I don't think it's true. But I think it's absolutely universal in terms of that experience. And that's why I wrote Less Chaos, More Cash. That was the essence of the deadly assumption that we as owners, supervisors, managers, people hiring, you know, second cameramen, we fall into this belief that some work is so simple and obviously important that it need not be explained. And when you fall into that trap, your expectations aren't met, and then you conclude, nobody can do this. I'm the only one who can do this. And then you're limited. And if you listen to the last episode about the transformation, about the potential that is limited when you adopt that mindset, all of that knowledge, experience, wisdom, intuition, gut instinct, it becomes limited by the number of hours you have in the day. And then the organization suffers. If we can't figure out in our businesses how to leverage what you know in the digital media, the videography, and the social media space, the company levels off. We've got to figure out how to expand that mastery that you have basically achieved, accomplished, and accumulated so that the company can continue to grow and benefit from that skill. And the same thing is true here. So whether it's a sawyer, whether it's a finisher, whether it's a salesperson, you mentioned a new salesperson in our sales office, this is applying to every facet of the business. And I mentioned sawyer because we're dealing with that right now. And so I really want to work through this, answer this question, how do you define expectations in the context of us doing this with our cutting task, with our sawyer position, our production manager, 15 years with the company, massive experience, massive intuition, could run that saw with his eyes shut, not even thinking about it, but he didn't have time. He's got to run the shop and all the employees. But we got a sawyer in that position to perform that task. And his expectations aren't being met. So we are literally working through this in real time. I was coaching him through this yesterday. And we're going to talk about it. I'm just basically going to walk this out, talk it out. How do you answer this question? How do you begin to define expectations? And you answer that two ways. You first have to assess what your expectations are. And had you ever, had the thought ever crossed your mind to stop long enough to think, okay, what am I expecting this guy to actually do now that I've hired him and he's brought his camera and we're going to do this shoot all day? Did you stop long enough to do that?
No, I thought it was so obvious. And I was like, well, I'll give him these pointers. He knows what we're doing. We'll be fine. And in the interest of saving time, I shot myself in the foot, essentially.
Well, guess what? We did the same thing with this new sawyer. We brought him in. He had some experience. We thought, how hard could it be? We threw him out there in the saw. And guess what? Our expectations aren't being realized. So step one, what I'm coaching our production manager through, because this is a process we use in real time in the business, you got to establish your essential expectations. You've got to stop long enough to think through it. What do I actually expect this guy to do? What is the essence of a successful accomplishment of this task? And it's a brain dump. It's not pretty. It's not organized. You simply stop and you brainstorm and you write it down. What do I expect? What are my expectations? So that's number one. That's the first step in defining expectations, is realizing that you have them. I mean, it's a shock to most of us because we never stop long enough to even think about it. What we do is so intuitive, so second nature. So that's number one, a brain dump. You brainstorm, you just get those expectations. And at first it's going to be difficult, but once you get into it, you're going to realize, oh my gosh, I actually have all kinds of expectations about how I expect this task to be performed. And then you'll realize, I've never communicated a single one of these to the person who's out there running that piece of equipment. Wow. So that's why this is so important. Number two, though, is even more important. You've got to take those essential expectations and then convert those into measurable standards. You've got to define in measurable terms what those expectations are. And we do that two ways. It's timing and it's tolerances. When do you want this task done? And then how well do you want this task done? When does a guy change the setting on a camera? Is it lighting? Is it outdoor, indoor? Is it how cloudy it is, how sunny it is? There would be a point which you would say, when this happens, or when we get into the later part of the day and the sun has changed, then that's one timing. That is an example of a timing tolerance. For a sawyer, one of the things our production manager identified was, look, slabs have got to be cut. Jobs have got to be cut 5 days before the install. If they're not, then we limit the amount of time we have for production. And then we're squeezed, we're doing overtime, we're rushing, we're scrambling. So out of the gate, here's the timing. And there's a whole bunch of them. He had 13 measurable standards on his overview here, his second draft. One of them was that slabs for a job have to be cut 5 days before the scheduled install. That's an example. On time is not quite good enough. So here's another standard that I gave our production manager a really bad time about. This was kind of fun. Number 12 on his list of measurable standards was fiberglass rod monitoring. So we fiberglass rod every single solitary undermount sink that ever leaves our shop. And the sawyer is responsible for cutting those rods into the countertops before they go on the CNC and are finished. So here's what his standard was. When running low, notify supervisor or lead installer. And I said, Andy, do you see a problem with that? So Wes, do you see a problem with that? Where's the gap there in terms of a definable, measurable standard?
It sounds good, but the first thought is, what's running low mean? Is it one? Is it 20? Is it 100 rods low? What does that mean?
Well, for a production manager who's been doing it for years and years and years, who A, knows how many rods a week we use, B, knows how long it takes to get more of the rod material in, didn't even think about it. He senses. It's intuition. He glances by, oh, boy, we're getting low. He didn't even think about it. Makes a mental note, goes to his office, jots that down, orders the stuff on the next round, has it in time, and production doesn't stop. But what if you're using 6 to 8 rods a day, and it takes a week to get that rotting material? And your expectation is, hey, when we're running low, let me know. And the sawyer's going, I'm brand new. I mean, okay, there's one left. I think we're running low. Are we running low yet? And the production manager goes, it takes a week to get that rotting material. And so now what do? Do we either not rod counters for the next week and just grind production to a halt? Do we maybe just sneak by? We'll let this standard go. We'll just run these counters on the CNC without rodding. What happens if a countertop breaks then? Or it breaks during installation because it didn't have a rod in it. You can see the almost cataclysmic possibilities when you don't define those standards. Or maybe they spend twice as much for the rodding to have it overnighted. Any one of those alternatives is extremely costly to the company. And from moderately expensive to catastrophically expensive if a countertop breaks. And so I was, Andy, what exactly does running low mean? And you should have seen the look on his face and him slapping his forehead like, oh, I did it again. And that just goes to show how common this is.
Because I think it feels so obvious, like, oh yeah, of course, that's what it means. And as you're listening to it, you're like, yeah, I can do it. But then as you're writing it out, you realize even someone who knows still writes a sentence like that, yep, realizing it's not measurable.
Yep. Even our second draft, second conversation, mm-hmm, working through defining this task, it still shows up. So what would a measurable standard be for when to notify your supervisor when, you know, what is running low? How is running low defined? That's really the question. And it's got to be defined in a measurable tolerance. Is it, you know, when the barrel is half full, when there's, if say it takes a week to get the rotting material and you use 8 a day, well, that's 5 days a week. So when there's 40 sticks left, notify your supervisor. That gets him time to order it, receive it, get it cut so it doesn't slow production down. It's got to be measurable some way. And it's completely up to the individual establishing the standard. You use common sense. You assess the situation, the complexity of the task, but you've got to put it in measurable terms. It's got to be timing. It's got to be tolerance. The same thing would be true for cuts. If it's a 16th over on one piece and a 16th under on the other, and you go to install them and there's an 1/8 of an inch gap, sorry, the customer's going to go, no. And I can say that because we're dealing with that right now. So for certain cuts, there's no tolerance. There's no variation from the dimension. On other cuts, they're going to have a 3 cm backsplash sitting on it. You could probably vary as much to a 1/2 inch. Who cares? It's covered. So you've got to define that though. Do you want your sawyer spending inordinate amounts of time making covered cuts perfect and then missing cuts where it is actually really important and critical that they be right on? You got to define it. So for backsplash, it's nuts on.
Some of the standards as you're setting them, you might think, oh, I'm insulting the guy person. And like, it's so obvious, like we've talked about.
Yeah.
But the person on the other end, when they hear it, they feel relieved. They don't feel insulted. Yep. They're like, good. I can measure this. I feel good. So setting those standards, those specific measurements, it works on both sides.
It's very freeing. In fact, that's one of the chapters in my book, Less Chaos, More Cash. One of the reasons why owners and supervisors avoid this is because the belief, it feels like you're insulting somebody's intelligence. It really does feel that way when the exact opposite is true. You're freeing them from that apprehension that I don't even know what's expected. I walk out of here every day going, did I do what I'm supposed to do or not? I don't know. Yeah, so it's a great point. I mean, honestly, that's a fantastic point. So ladies and gentlemen, that's the essence of it. Wes, if we're going to hire this person to come in as an assistant to you, this is where we would begin. We would begin by a brain dump of what are your essential expectations? What are you going to, so you don't repeat. Yeah, by the way, you mentioned this video. What exactly were you videoing?
It was a music video, actually.
A music video. And what kind of music?
Yeah, hardcore rap music video, actually. That's for another day, though, I think.
Cutting by day, moonlighting as a hardcore rap videographer by night. That's
a past life.
We won't go into any more of that. I don't want to know. But the fact is, to do this right, to do this the next time, this is the power of this, that the past experiences don't impact going forward. The opportunity here is recognizing this. Oh, It all comes down to how you define your expectations, whether or not that person is going to meet them, and how well you communicate them. This is just one facet of it. This is simply the part of establishing definable standards and defining your expectations. There's a whole nother aspect of this, of actually documenting it and then coaching somebody through that documentation until they get to the point where they're actually meeting your expectations. And the company is benefiting from the successful completion of that task. And typically, there's the power of it. You get the same sort of outcome at about half the cost, because my production manager makes a little bit more than our new Sawyer does. But we can get that Sawyer to where he is just as productive as our production manager would be.
Back in the day, actually, when I was on the saw, we hired a new Sawyer to replace me. And my first thought is, how can I can't, he'll never be as good or as fast and I as me. And then a short time later, he was better and faster than me.
Oh my gosh.
And so it was, yeah, I mean, something I thought no one else could do it better. How am I supposed to teach him? But after doing the process of documenting, setting him up for success, he was better and faster than I was on the saw.
Wow. And we did document that position for him. Mm-hmm. We failed on this new Sawyer. To honestly, that was where we stumbled. And that's where we're having to go back to the drawing board. It's such a great way to wrap up this episode. So fellow fabricator, fellow stone shop owner, fellow stone shop department supervisor, if you can relate to this, you're not alone. This is a universally common experience. And I just encourage you to do this. If you're intrigued by this, if you'd like to figure out how to better set your expectations and to implement these processes, visit fabricatorsfriend.com. Check out the book page. You can download the first three chapters of the book for free. You can either get them in a written form. You can get them in an audio form so you can listen to it. And then consider picking up a copy of Less Chaos, More Cash, because I go into great detail as to how to carry this concept all the way to its conclusion, to where that Sawyer is actually producing at a higher level than you are, even when you began the process thinking there's no way. It's actually possible. So ladies and gentlemen, as always, what a privilege, what an honor. Wes, great to have you back from vacation. Great to have you on the episode. This has been one of the funnest episodes we've produced in my memory. And I'm so glad to have had this opportunity to spend this time with you. So ladies and gentlemen, fellow fabricators, fellow stone shop owners, department supervisors, if you like the podcast, make sure you subscribe and make sure you share this with other fabricators that would benefit from this content. Make sure you check out our Fabricator's Friend Instagram page and Facebook page. Send us a note. Send us a question. Tell us how we're doing. We'd love to hear from you. And make sure you check back in next week for the next episode of the Fab Lab podcast. Until then,
happy fabricating.